What's up, everybody? Welcome back to In My Non-Expert Opinion. I'm your host, Chelsea Reif, and we are currently in our Media Maven series. And today we have Media Maven herself, Kat fucking Marnell. Kat is the New York Times bestselling author of How to Murder Your Life and Audible original Self-Tanner for the Soul, How I Ran Away to Europe and Found My Inner Glow When Life Got Dark. Kat has been called New York's enfant terrible by The Telegraph, the hottest mess in fashion, according to the New York Post, and a chaotic train wreck on Reddit. Her memoir about her life as a beauty journalist and editor while she was addicted to drugs has been called controversial, divisive, and glorifying drug abuse. I have my own thoughts about Kat. I got to meet her in person at a writing retreat in Greece, and here's what the headlines don't tell you. Kat is whip smart and charming. She treats her work the way Christians treat the Bible, devoted. She doesn't fuck around with her recovery. She set up systems and environments and changed her thoughts to stay sober. She actually just celebrated over 1 year of being sober late last year. Yeah, she's a little skittish and a little flighty, but she's nice. Like, she's a kind soul. Imagine writing solo dolo your whole life and enjoying being an introvert, then hosting your first retreat with a bunch of fangirls. Yeah, she doesn't give warm, fuzzy bear hugs, but that's not really what I expected of her. She lives a full life, and travel has filled up her cup immensely. She's not a broken, tortured shell of herself that the media paints her to be. Or rather, the Reddit threads. In Greece, during our retreat, I felt like Kat was in her natural habitat. Getting sun, writing nonstop, eating salads, and as she calls it, quote-unquote, being a hobo. She'd shove salad ingredients from the buffet breakfast bar into a plastic bag and bring them to the beach, wear mismatched clothing and accessories, and not give a flying fuck what people thought. At the same time, she does care that people like her. She reads her mean Reddit threads, she has Google Alerts on for herself. She notices how people look at her. That's why today's interview is so special to me. Kat is someone who I've admired since I read How to Murder Your Life, and especially her Audible book. I feel like there's a side of Kat that you sometimes see in her Patreon, Beauty Shambles, or on the rare podcast interview she does, but getting to sit on a bed together in Greece, gabbing about travel and writing and creativity in a rambly whirlpool of scatterbrained thoughts, that's exactly what I wanted. And today, you're going to hear that conversation. Now, keep in mind, we didn't have the right tech in Greece, so the sound quality isn't ideal, but I think that's exactly how it was meant to be in true Kat Marnell fashion. Shambly, messy, a bit chaotic, but insightful and fun. Let's get into it.
Kat Marnell, we are lounging in a hotel room in Greece.
On some stiff-ass beds.
Stiff-ass beds. And I'm just curious, what country number is this for you? Do you know?
Well, I've been to Greece before, so this is literally, this must be my fourth time in Greece. I've been to Greece twice this year. I went with my dad in April on a Duke University travels trip. I know, I went to Mykonos with my 74-year-old dad, which is pretty funny. And, but then I was in Greece last summer. Actually, it might be like my fifth or sixth time in Greece. I don't know. I'm a lucky woman, but I'm a strategic woman. 74. But, and then I have some stuff straggling at the end because I remember I went on a cruise when I was a child. I think I went to like the Virgin Islands and all this stuff. I don't remember, but I do remember that cruise. I love a cruise. I wish that was back in. They're fucking cool. Yeah. Well, when that big cruise ship went viral this year and everyone was making fun of it, I was like, that looks so cool.
By the way, Kat's talking about the cruise that went absolutely viral on TikTok. It's Royal Caribbean's Serenade of the Seas, and there's a whole group of people that are on it for 9 months, going to every single continent, including Antarctica, and visiting over 60 countries. As you can imagine, being on a cruise for 9 months, with a bunch of people filming every experience, is starting to turn into a reality show. There are full dedicated TikTok accounts trying to cover the drama that's happening on this boat. Just search cruise on TikTok, and I'm sure you'll see what everyone's talking about. Either way, I doubt any of you are going on a 9-month cruise, so don't pay attention to what you see on TikTok. Start with a nice, cute little 3-day one instead. Maybe go to the Bahamas, maybe take one in Europe. I wouldn't start with a 9-month cruise.
It's made fun of a lot, but I think there's nice ways, and it's cheaper.
I think I just went to the equivalent of a cruise for my birthday on September 10th, when in between the two sessions of this Greek retreat, which we'll get to in a second, but I went to Ia Napa, Cyprus. So that added to my country count. That was my 74th country. It's like water parks, amusement rides, like parakeets on the street. Yeah. Oh, totally. I love Florida too. I go there all Because I live in New York and I fucking like it. Hollywood, I mean, Los Angeles, I just call it Hollywood. Los Angeles is too much. I always have to live on the East Coast because it's close to Europe. I couldn't move to the West Coast. It's too far away from everything I enjoy, such as France.
Such as France. You're a big France fan too, which a lot of Americans aren't.
Dude, I've spent more time in France than any other country, and that is not easy to do. But I love the French. I've stayed in a lot of Airbnbs. I stay in people's homes there, like in weird little apartments by the train station with women with like short hair who are very confused by why I'm there. The answer is to save money.
Yeah. So you're saying in shared room Airbnbs?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that's when I would be really broke traveling France. I could just go back to France again and again. I want to go to every small place, every train station. I want to go to Chum and like not just the big cities. I like the second and third cities, the villages. So I need to be with someone with a car next.
If you're unclear what second and third cities are, they're basically medium-sized and small cities of the developing world that urban growth is expected to be the greatest. That's coming from gsdrc.org. I spent most of my 20s in Chicago, and Chicago's nickname is Second City. There's a lot of debate over this because some people say it's competing with New York, so that's why it's considered a second city, and other people say it's called Second City because of the Great Chicago Fire, which essentially burned the entire city down, and when they rebuilt everything, people started calling it Second City, given its rebirth. And you know, I'm not sure which one is right. If you're from Chicago, why do you think it's called Second City?
But there's so much left for me to do in France, and I would really like to spend a lot more time there for the rest of my life.
I also love France.
Who doesn't? What's not to love?
The accent is so romantic, the food, the weather. You said something earlier in this retreat that you respect the hostility sometimes that people have towards Americans. And that's why Americans are scared to go to France. They think they hate us. How would you recommend Americans?
They do not hate us. They just want you to be like, first of all, you just always introduce yourself by saying, I'm sorry, I speak no French. They all speak English. They're relieved to speak in English. They just don't want you showing up disorganized, wacky. Paris, you can be in Paris. I used to wear like a jungle green wig and dressed in like, this is my first summer I started traveling. I had all crazy drug addict clothes. I looked like a little mermaid, like walking around. And actually in Paris, I was treated like gold. I looked like a little, this is kind of pre-Instagram, but yeah, they love me with my green hair. But then if you wear green hair in like Istanbul, they don't like you as much. But yeah, the French, they're nice. The Italians, not as nice. And people think Italians are like, oh, you're like pasta loving. Nah, dude. Go up to Lake Como and report back to me. You were going to get some cold-ass, cold-blooded, fascist Italians. And I can say that as a part Italian.
I also have avoided Italy a lot for that reason. And people ask what your favorite type of man is and this and that. And I'm like, I just know for some reason Italians, it's too full-on for me. They are kind of cold. I feel like they don't like me. Do you have a favorite genre of people?
Quick note, I retract this statement. I met a ton of Italians in Bucharest, Romania, and they quickly became my favorite people, so much so that I'm probably having an Italian summer. Pretend I never said this. Italians, I love you. I'm obsessed with you. See you in Italy, summer 2024.
Yeah, Russians. I like a Russian man.
Why is that?
My ex that I'll always be in love with is Russian. Shout out to Mike Mint.
Shout out
to Mike Mint. I still love you. He'll never listen to it, though. Just kidding. He knows. He knows. I tell him all the time. He's like, hangs up on me. I'm like, I do like Russians. And I love, when I was in Serbia, I told you, I was like, Serbian guys, I love them. How they pick you up from the train station. I like a Serbian basketball player. I like a heavier guy, like a beefy guy. I've never slept with a French guy. I like the Eastern Bloc.
You like the Eastern one.
Oh, definitely.
I heard Serbia is not only the spot for guys, it's the spot for art. And it's just all around like some of the friendliest people, which is, again, I don't think Americans know that. What are countries that you think people have a big misunderstanding or stereotype about that they're just totally wrong?
In addition to France, which I feel like is full of extremely nice people.
Yeah.
Well, it's unfortunate. God, the saddest thing, Ukraine used to be the place I told people to go. Like, they're like, what's the weird place you go? And I was like, Ukraine. People didn't know about it so much from the US, like, or didn't think about it too much. And it was like Kiev was such an awesome, fun, light place to be, really like festive. It reminded me of like San Francisco, and the layout was like San Francisco and the hills and all the students. And it was like really welcoming. And then, I mean, the nicest people in the whole world, I feel like, are in Thailand. Like the Thai people are friggin' awesome. And then I think the English, I think that England and London, like people think it's all Princess Kate and snooty Londoners when it's like down ass people and they like Americans. I love English. I love the British.
They're so fun. They're so self-deprecating. They don't take anything seriously.
Yeah. And there are snobs. No one makes fun of the snobs in the UK more than the people in the UK.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone else is down as hell. I like any place where people are drinking little bottles of wine by the train station, just in like cheap clothes. I mean, that's most of Europe.
It really is.
I love it. I find the people who are the rudest to me in traveling were Argentina is up there. They've got their own strong culture. I was, you know, Buenos Aires, and then I was out in Uruguay, that beach, that like really cool beach. There's like the Hamptons of Uruguay. There's a beach out there. I think Montevideo is the, yeah, I've been there. But those places, I felt like they were quite hostile. And then, honestly, like I said, Northern Italy, I find very hostile. I'm always relieved to cut back into France. And then for the most beautiful, like if you're going to spend money, everybody should go to Switzerland. You got to see like Geneva, like Lucerne, like all that shit. And I mean, there's just so much. I love it all. I love it all. I mean, if we went through every place I've ever been, I could tell you everything. But I always talk Europe, and I've done a lot of Asia. I want to do everything. I want to go to every country in the world. You know about that community. Yeah. Some people have done it by the time they're 24 or so.
Yeah. And that's something we talked about is that it can become like an addiction where you're just like, mm-hmm. I feel stressed out. I want to take a break. I want to save some money. I want to like find a partner. But then you're like, but I don't actually, when I think about that, I want to see every country and every corner of the world.
Yeah.
It feels exhausting. How have you dealt with that?
Well, COVID intercepted. When I left New York, I got very intimidated by it in a way. I lived in New York for all those years. And when I was thinking every time I was still traveling, and I meant to stay away one summer, stay away 3.5 years, I would be like, oh, time to get a new apartment. And from when I was in other countries looking at apartments online, I'm like, how did I ever do this? And all of a sudden it seemed very daunting. And I was like, I was so scared to go back, but COVID made me have to. And I'm glad I did, because I did reestablish myself in New York, made a ton of new friends. But now it's kind of like I'm back out here where this is, yeah, it is at the expense of my personal life. But, you know, I traveled in my 30s. I started traveling after the publication of my book to honestly just take a break from all of that, with the plan, again, just put your stuff in expenses storage unit, because you're not going to keep paying for it. It's only a few months, $400 a month or something, which turns into an unbelievable amount of money. Manhattan Mini Storage raises the rates. Anyway, it's like a nursing home. Like, it's predatory. I was paying so much money for years. And yeah, it was at the expense of other things. Like, I truly believe that the reason that I'm not, for example, married or in love or even have a kid right now is one part that I had drug problems, even though I was getting, travel did make me a lot healthier. But the other is that I traveled. I traveled all of those years, like crucial years from 36 to now I'm 41. But maybe that's not true, because I came back at 30. I'm losing track, but yes, I love to travel and I don't care. If no one was around in society, like my dad, who's like really conservative, and I know I'm like his old maid daughter, his unmarried wench daughter. No, he loves me, but I would just travel numbly by myself forever.
Traveling numbly is definitely something long-term travelers can relate to. Sometimes doing things that spike your dopamine 24/7 leaves you jaded, checked out, and a bit aloof to the magic around you. I talked about this in late 2023 on episodes 214 and 215 about the digital nomad lifestyle. If you're a long-term traveler, you know what Kat's talking about. Sometimes travel is glamorous, and sometimes, yeah. It's pretty numbing.
I don't care. Now I try to take pictures of myself in the places, but I never give a fuck. You know, I love, like, I wrote a book and I make money so I could see the world, not so the world could see me. And I never meant to be, sorry, this is a long answer. I never meant to be in the articles. Like, I always wanted to write the articles. And I think I hid out a lot from the attention. I'm an introverted person.
This is something I think the media gets wrong about Kat. They often paint her to be obsessed with attention, but when I met her, I could tell she's 100% a writer through and through. Her writing is her world, not all the attention that she gets from it.
Travel is like bliss for the introvert, right? Like, I mean, a lot of people travel and talk to people. I don't. I avoid all contact. Like, I love that part of it. I love getting to disappear. It's not like these retreats that we're on now with lots of people. You can just completely disappear. I used to walk around in like disguises in Asia. Oh, God. Well, I would dress kind of like Justin Bieber, especially when you're in a country where you really don't want harassment by the men. And there's only been a few with, gosh, I'm trying to think, where would I have had real trouble with the men? And I'm having trouble. I know there's been some where I've been like, this is wild. Certain parts of actually Greece and Turkey, when you travel alone in some of these beach towns full of like young drinking people, like expats and stuff, like when you're a solo female traveler, I had real issues. But I used to just like, I love just wearing no makeup and looking like shit. Just, it was freedom for me. Yeah. It was freedom from a lot of shit. And I still love it. I love when the airplane takes off. Oh my God. The glittery sprawl underneath. I just love it. I love trains the best.
Trains
are the best. God,
the most magical feeling for me comes on trains.
Of course.
It's the best.
Train stations. Like, I love them.
Train stations, the quietness. You can just do whatever.
Yeah, I just love it.
It's the best. What was a country that you felt so free that you're like, I could see myself maybe staying here long term? Has that ever happened for you?
Yes.
Which place?
I think Basel, Switzerland is where if someone would be like, all right, Kat, you have to do a year right now. Like, obviously London goes without saying. I spent a lot of time in London, but I almost spent so much time there that wouldn't even be like, I've already built my second. Yeah. I just use that as the way other people in New York use LA. I go to London. Yeah. I'm holding down London because it used to be that New Yorkers all were into London, but now I feel like I'm the only one who's hanging out there. Yeah, Basel, Switzerland is fuck. It's great. It's got the art scene. It's got this cafe culture by the river, but it's contemporary art cafe culture because everything there is based in the contemporary art scene. So I just love it there. And I love Switzerland. I mean, what's not to love again? It's expensive. It's fabulous, though. It's just wonderful. I will live in Basel, Switzerland. Even for a month, I'll do it. But I go there all the time. It's right on the border of Germany and France. So you can, when you stay in one of them, you're going to places in three countries.
That's the coolest part. And they speak other languages, right?
Oh, my God.
Germany.
English is the main place thing in Basel. I mean, yeah, it's Swiss.
Swiss.
Is that our language?
No, I'm like,
is it? Is Swiss a language?
Guys, we figured it out. Swiss German is the most widely spoken language, but just Swiss is not a language. No need to DM us. Thank you.
But like, yeah, what I love, they were speaking German because I was in that area.
Maybe it's walking. Oh yeah, I love it all.
Yeah, it's. I mean,
sorry,
I'm crying at the beauty.
It's amazing.
You wrote about a lot of this in Self Tanner for the Soul.
My Audible original.
Audible original.
That I only did to pay for yet more travel.
That I didn't even know about until I Googled if you had written any more books. Then it popped up and I...
That is an Audible original. It's not my second book. I just won't put it. But go ahead.
Yes, it was an audiobook, an Audible original.
It's called an Audible original. Okay. And I was brainwashed into saying this by Audible, but it is an Audible original.
Shout out Audible, this podcast. And it was right. I listened to it because I was feeling very depressed in Germany. I was going...
Which that happens.
Yeah, I mean, the weather doesn't make it to be that positive, but I was just in a really bad situation during lockdown. I was like, I think this relationship is about to be over and I want to travel and I just want to feel like there's someone else out there who's done this. And then the fact that your book was your original book, How to Murder Your Life, and that the Audible original came out, your How to Murder Your Life was the only one I ever read in one sitting. And so I was so happy when you recorded the Audible original. And when I listened to it, I was like, oh, she's catching those little mundane moments of like the hostel where he became best friends with these like two British guys. Mm-hmm.
The rare friends
yeah,
I've
the
made.
The wizard walks and
oh, yeah.
all these very like tiny, tiny little details, but those are the magic. Like it's probably not the big experiences of skydiving, but all these like big things.
Right.
And I think people don't understand how those little moments of the, yeah, the hostels and the disgusting bunk beds and all these things, like that's the magic. And I'm curious, can you just expand on that?
Like, that was the best. I love that people liked that because a lot of people didn't like it. I don't blame them if they didn't like it. It was different than anything I'd written. It was basically, I just plunked myself up and did something in such a desperate, painful time in my life where some horrible things were happening to me physically and personally in my personal life. And it was right after the promotion of my book, which had turned into this like completely humiliating. This time that was supposed to be the best time of my life was like horrible. And I was in so much pain, physical pain. And it gets hard to describe. And I'm writing about it in my next book, so I don't go there too much. But I was in hell and I couldn't believe what had happened to me. And I was either going to go to the hospital, and I was like, I've had enough hospitals. What I did have, which a lot of people don't, is a big ass check because I had published the book. And when you publish, you get another check, you know? I had gotten this big advance, so I had money. Listen, life is how we spend money, right? When it comes down to it, your choices with money, which I do want to get to that, are like what we, that's how we travel. That's what we don't. I was like, I'm going to take the money that I would spend living in New York and I'm just going to live abroad. I'm going to go to Europe. I missed the flight out there right away. Then I was like, I was going to start in Istanbul. I was going to do the Eurail thing. I bought the 3-month pass, which I hadn't activated yet because you buy it and then you activate it wherever you are and you get started. But I was going to fly to Istanbul and work my way all the way to England, which was not Brexit yet, I don't think. So it was still in there in the past. And Eurail, by the way, is the unlimited train station thing. And it was just basically, it looked like a big, glamorous paper check. It wasn't even on the phone yet. It looked like a bank check in this little plastic envelope and the conductors would take it out. And you're supposed to hand write where you're going in it. I'm talking like it's like the 70s. It was like 4 years ago. And now it's all on the phone and the app and all the, you have to get reservations for everything. Back then, you could just go. And I'd be like, how long can I stay on this train? But anyway, I didn't even start in Istanbul because my dad, who never, ever mentions drugs to me, called me. It was like, look, Kate, like, he calls me Kate. He's like, I think that if you go to Istanbul with your Adderall, and I had all of this Adderall hoarded because I was supposed to move to Glasgow with my boyfriend at the time, who I broke up with again, because we were going to move away together. And that exploded in my face again. Bless him. I love him. Shout out to Mike. And shout out to Mike Mint. So I had like 4 bottles of Adderall, which was my drug of choice, which now I'm sober, by the way. But I took it all there. And my dad's like, they're going to take your prescription drugs away. So I was like, no. And I couldn't cancel the flight to Turkey. So I lost that money right away. Basically, I started hemorrhaging money right away. I didn't know what I was doing. I flew into Portugal instead. And I started in Lisbon. And that started the whole summer where I wound up going to, I think, 25 countries all in this one train ticket. It was supposed to be 3 months. I extended to 4. And it changed my life. It was just unbelievable. Because I was just, it wasn't, they're actually like the big main cities are in there. And especially in countries like Hungary and stuff, where it's only Budapest and not much else. Like those, that is where I went. But like most of it was little places. Because I was on these weird ass trains with no direction whatsoever. I had no reservations at hotels. As I pulled into a hotel, I'd pull up hotels.com and like find whatever the cheapest thing was. I didn't stay in hostels until I ran out of money or I lost my debit cards and fucking, where did Mel Gibson do Passion of the Christ? That Matera, Italy, which is like, the whole thing was just crazy. But you're going to Albania soon, the craziest place I've ever been.
When you told me that, I was like, whoa, hold on a second. I thought it was like chill vibe. You're like, no, this is the craziest country I've ever been to. Can you explain why?
It was on fire. The mountains were on fire. No one even cared. There was these tiny buses. There was this tiny panting baby and 2 teen parents. The parents looked like 14 years old and the baby looked like it was like 3 pounds. And it was like, the baby was like gasping in this blanket, in this basket. There was no air conditioning in this tiny bus. And it was like, I was like, this so wild. I told you, all the dogs are having an orgy in the middle of the night. The horny dogs were following us home. They were all on the steps of the mosque. And then I woke up. I slept on the roof of my hostel because it was so hot. It was a $9 a night hostel. And I woke up and all the dogs, these horny dogs were all fucking each other. And no one believes me, but I have photos. And I photographed it. I was like a dog pornographer. And I have dog photos. It's really gross. And it was just my first night.
And where was
Duras? It's a port city. That's where you come in when you take the ferry from Italy.
Yeah, guys, that's where I'm going next for 6 weeks.
Yes. And you're not going to have, and the best part, you're not going to have fucking reception. Like when you check your phone, you're not going to, but maybe they fixed it. Have you Googled anything?
No.
Have fun.
It'd be like Croatia or like
just nope.
A bit above it. I'm like, oh, I'm going to be fine.
Do we even know if we don't know officially if it's in the EU or not?
We didn't even know if it was Euros yesterday. You're like, I don't even know if there's an ATM where you're the like, that you need to cross the border.
No, that was Romania. When Vama Vetch Romania, I love Romania. You have to go there. Yeah, Vama Vetch Romania, there is no ATM and you have to use the ATM. It's like the cool party city. You have to walk back across the border to Bulgaria, use the ATM and get your passport stamped to take out cash. I tried to check into my hostel there and they were like, you have to walk to Bulgaria. And I did it.
It really sounds fake. Like you have to walk across the border to get money out and then come pay for this thing.
Yeah.
Get your passport stamped to get money out.
This is the things that I do because I love to travel. We're crazy.
No, we really are. Like people are like, I don't understand. Like, when are you going to settle down? Where are you going to settle down?
No.
That's not.
I tried.
Realm of reality. Yeah.
I tried to settle down.
I lived in Chicago for 6 years. And then I was like, I'm done with this life. Like, I'm ready to move on.
It's too beautiful out there. What are we supposed to do? It's too beautiful. It's too special.
You can't unsee it.
Yeah, exactly. You can't unsee it. Sorry, people who haven't traveled as much as you can't unsee it. And what am I supposed to tell my dad? Like, I'm really glad that my father, shout out to Dr. Marnell, has this awesome life. And he's very responsible and he drives his car and he has a dope job and blah, blah, blah. But like, and I do all of that. I work hard too. That's a whole different thing. But once you can't unsee it.
You really can't. It's something like when you move up a level in your business and you like can't get down promoted. I mean, unless you get fired, it's just like a certain thing that you're like, wait, I've seen now 70 whatever countries. Like now I need to see 100 and I'm going to see the rest of the world. And then I'm just keep going until I die.
And these places like, dude, right? Like people always ask, where should I go? And I'm like, I find the best money spent in the world. Take a fucking flight to Barcelona, go east to France. Like that strip of coastline between Barcelona and like Marseille, a wraparound to Venice, all of that, Croatia, like that coastline along the southern part of Europe is just like some of the dopest shit you will see in your life. Venice is like a magic ass place, like everything. I mean, oh, you have to.
I just haven't spent a lot of time in Italy. And
there's so much to see.
Yeah, in France, I always end up in
Venice. Go to Venice. Go to Venice right away. Venice is just spectacular. There's nothing like it. Well, I told you to go to Transylvania for Halloween.
That was not on my radar at all. And then the pieces started getting put together. And I'm like, wait, I am going to be close. What other holiday would I go to Transylvania?
And I told you there's like a little Batman train. And there's little stained glass bats in the train station there. And like this creepy little train. Yeah. And the air changes and you chug up in the mountains and you go on castle tours. And it looks like Transylvania. It looks like a Count Chocula box up there for real.
FYI, I did go to this party in Transylvania. It wasn't the best party I've ever been to. It's just honestly in a big tent by the castle. But the bragging rights to say you've partied at Dracula's castle for Halloween are totally worth it.
I love travel. I love travel. I don't care. I don't care about anything else. I do not care about people. I'm sorry. I love dogs. I can't have a dog because I can't travel with him.
Yeah, travel. And by the way, everyone, again, if you want to hear these little details, this is what you wrote about in Self-Tanner of the Soul.
Yes, my audiobook, which is a diary. And I think that if I look at the big scope of my career or if people read my How to Murder Your Life, which I think that when I started to feel better, because I wasn't always as sick as I was back then, and I got some freedom, I was just like, my body had to move. I was in bed a lot. When I was in my 20s, for example, like when I wasn't at work, I was flat on my back. Like, I was tired. That's what addiction is. You are tired. And half of that time, you're just tired because you can't go to sleep when you need to go to sleep. Like, and you have a job and you can't. Like, if I try, like, I couldn't sleep. I could never have fallen asleep at 11 p.m. Like, I needed to, my bosses did or my coworkers, to get a full night's rest and be at the office at 9:30, you know, like. And so I was always just so exhausted. And I was cooped up in these dark apartments, or just like in this life, I was cooped up in my own, I was in my own body. And it's like, the best thing about travel also is that it's such a physical activity. It made me so healthy.
Do you think it saved your life, travel?
I think it definitely turned my life around. Someone like me, I mean, I've had overdoses and stuff, but that wasn't really, I've had a heroin overdose, but I wasn't a heroin user. But just that's why it's like weird when it happens. But I was sick. I was incredibly low energy, poor nutrition, no sunshine. And even though I was like really fun, whatever, I was just like a vampire. I was living in a Tribeca apartment. I never even like left it, you know, except to go to some parties and stuff at night and get my picture taken when my career popped off. But even when I was doing well after my book and stuff, I just like, I was still wacky. Now I think I always have a tan and I'm healthy and I've carried suitcases all over the world and I get up at 7:45 and
get on your shit now.
Yeah, travel did that. And that's before I even got sober. I'm almost 10 months sober, but travel changed my life. It turned it around.
I will say, after reading your book and even your Patreon, you know, some of the older articles, the destruction that you did to your body and your brain when we met in person, I was expecting you to look a little more frail, like fucking eyes and like the like crack at the, if you ran into a wall. And I'm like, no, you're strong as fuck. I've seen you at yoga, holding all the side planks, doing the chaturangas. And I know you value health and exercise so much. And I know when people are traveling, they feel like, well, I'm on vacation, and like, when am I going to work out? How do you still prioritize that when you're on the road?
Two words. Her name is Kit Rich. I love her. She is Jennifer Lawrence's trainer. She's on YouTube, and she has a ton of free YouTubes. And her whole thing is because she has all these celebrity clients. It's like exercise for hotel rooms. And I do this almost anywhere, and it's only 30 minutes. I mean, you're always tired when you're traveling, but I just can't. For the first year, or year and a half, I traveled, I didn't exercise when I was abroad because I was like, oh, I'm getting enough steps and I'm walking and blah, blah, blah. But now I always do it in addition. Yeah, but not everyone has to be like me. I pushed myself. I definitely have an eating disorder brain, and that pushes myself really hard to exhaustion. But that's okay. That's part of travel too. Travel can be like a big treadmill. Like, it's not always this deep experience. It's hardly ever actually a deep experience for me. It's more like looking at it, watching a movie. Actually, no, it's like watching a video game, like beautiful, cool video game. I always say a movie has like actual conflict in it and like people and relationships. Travel is not like that for me.
If you're someone who daydreams about travel and then you hear Kat say something like travel can be like a big treadmill, maybe it sounds like travel is avoidance. And here's the thing. Sometimes it is. I've thought about this recently where sometimes I do feel like I'm avoiding some serious adult responsibilities, like saving for a down payment on a home or thinking about a future mortgage or where I want to settle down and raise children. Because to me, travel often ends up taking the priority. I'm like, why would I settle down and buy a house when I have every corner of the world to see? Why would I consider buying a home when home ownership has never been appealing to me? So sometimes travel is a way to fill up your cup, and sometimes it's a way to avoid confrontation that you have to have with yourself. Life is a series of decisions, and when you're constantly on the go and traveling, the only decisions you have to worry about is where you're staying, do you have money, can you get out of there, and is it safe?
Until I came here on these retreats where there was plenty of conflict. Just kidding, not much.
Yeah, I would say that if you travel, you actually do. That's why I started working on lifting weights, because I was like, holy shit, lifting my suitcase up in the overhead.
Oh, yeah.
You need to be fucking in shape. And now I feel so strong that I'm like, it's actually motivating me to just get stronger and stronger. If I want to keep traveling at this pace, you can't be like, you have to be strong and healthy.
Yeah. I definitely, the workouts that I do, like I'm going to do one after this, the Kit Rich stuff, it's like probably about 20 minutes of cardio, just very basic, kind of like jumping jacks, jump squats, push-ups, tricep dips, and then like you're on the floor for 10 minutes with Pilates moves. Just like you get it done and it's not too much. Like workouts, I don't go to gyms and stuff anywhere in the world. I use a hotel, but most of the time, and then I travel with some equipment, but I haven't actually used it this time. I usually travel with a Pilates ball and a little straw. I travel with a resistance band and sliders. I have a little kit. I actually do. It's actually a Kit Rich product, but I don't want to plug it because she doesn't make it anymore. She's directing a movie, so she's like stopped, but...
Amazing. We talked a lot about budget travel. You were talking about the $9 hostel, the Hero Rail Pass. What are some other hacks or tricks that you have for people that are very passionate about budget travel?
I always, always use Google Flights. I do not overpay for flights. Flights dictate what I do. I've become very cheap and money, like I think of everything now as travel money. I just don't like when I go, I used to use hotels.com, but they just switched, like they just started sucking. For years, my favorite travel trip is that like every 10th night at hotels.com is free. And like for the average of what you've, but that just got canceled. But I always, you know, when I'm sorting where I'm going to stay, it's always, I start with the cheapest. And I love a shared bathroom. If there's like, or if you're in somewhere expensive, like Scandinavia, like there'll be something on a boat, like a $40 room. I'll stay in anything with like a twin bed. Like private rooms are great, but I always have to have air conditioning if it's summer and stuff. But yeah, I use like booking.com, Google Flights. Oh my God, a bird just flew into our glass.
That's sweet. Jumping over the balcony.
And yeah, I eat like really cheap. I don't dress up. Like travel, I know it looks really great, but like, I don't travel with all the dresses and the shoes when I do have to do that. The few times in my life, that's been very stressful for me. And I'm like, I can't do this. Like, yeah. I travel, so...
You called yourself, I think, a professional hobo at dinner the other night.
Oh, yeah, I am. I'm a street urchin. I am not out there with... Even high heels weigh so much. To carry them, packing high heels and all that shit. It's like, oh, it's so much.
I'm tall. I'm 5'9". And last year, I packed, like... 7 pairs of heels as if
ridiculous. No.
And I'm like, you don't even wear heels in your normal day-to-day life. And I had to have mules. My friends in the group carry them with me. And then by the end, I just sold them on like Facebook Marketplace.
My essentials, Ziploc bags. I'd rather have Ziploc bags when I travel than a pair of high heels. You put everything. I get 2 boxes of them. I travel with them. You put everything in them. You take lunch from the breakfast buffet in them. I eat salad out of a bag with my hands like an animal. I don't care. I eat a lot of McDonald's salads when I'm on the road. I spend as little as possible on food because I don't care about food. I don't go to restaurants. And I don't stay in, like, a great way to lose money is to stay in hotels. If you really want to travel, you need to spend less than you want to. Like, you have to stay in place to earn it. But that being said, like, I always stay by the train station. That's for convenience and just, like... But yeah, booking.com is usually the best thing for hotels now. But things have gotten expensive. Paris used to be cheap. You used to be able to get a hotel room anywhere in France for $60 when I started traveling, including Paris. And now it's, I'm looking at Paris right now, But booking.com does a price adjustment, which I didn't realize, which is when you book something and then the rates go down, it gives you the reimbursement. And I've never had that before.
Boy.
I keep getting these notices and going to Paris. And yeah.
Oh my God, I only know Hostel World because I see that.
Yeah, I used to use that a lot. I was proud of using hostels because hostels are hard. You save a ton of money. It's almost like a game. So I've stayed in hostels at least 100 or 150 nights in my life in the past 2 years.
You spend money on like what you value, right? So some people will spend more on the accommodation because they're like, I'm an introvert. I want to have my safe space. I want to come home and be comfortable, but I'm going to be cheap about the meals or I'm going to be cheap about whatever, vice versa. Is there stuff that you splurge on when you travel?
Is there? Sure. Museum tickets can get really expensive, but I always think it's worth it. Even though sometimes the museums at the architecture thing is the best at night. But I do also look for like free museum nights. And I just do like a game. Like I was just in Toronto for 3 days and I happened to see that the free museum night for the art museum, one art museum was Friday. So I went, I got the reservation in advance for that. And I do that in New York too. I don't know. I really believe in saving like micro money. But the problem is, like, I don't actually consciously splurge on anything or let myself because I know, guess what's going to come? Mistakes. We make big travel mistakes, right? Or plans. That's your splurge because that shit is waiting for you. Right now, by the way, like me, the smart traveler, I have a plane ticket to Tel Aviv tomorrow that I'm not using because I decided I changed my plans. Someone I know is going to be in Paris. I'm going to hang out with him maybe. But like, see, you know what I mean? And so I'm throwing away, and I have a rare. I usually don't do the non-refundable booking. I pay the extra for the ones you can cancel. This one, I wanted to lock down this one hotel in Tel Aviv because Tel Aviv is expensive. So I'm losing $300 on the fucking hotel in Jaffa. I lost the flight. I lost the flight to London that I was supposed to take out of Tel Aviv. So I've lost two, like, and that's like a $500 mistake. And that I'm doing it. So like, that's my splurge.
Yeah.
Is the fuck up. And let me, yeah, mistake money is, so don't worry about fucking treating yourself. You are. When you miss your Eurostar because you don't know that you have to check in early because it's a special international train and your luggage is going, like, that's your fucking splurge, honey.
Yeah.
Happy birthday. You missed the train and now you get to buy yourself another ticket. Happy birthday. You know what I mean? Like, that's the shit. Or when you're stuck in, like, a fucking music festival in France. Like, I love Pete Doherty's. From my whole 20s and love, like, and he's an indie musician. I would see him in France and I would not realize there's no way to get back. And the only way, like, is some pirate cab driver who's like 20, who's going to charge you like 200 euro. I don't think it was that much. Some insane amount that I was just stuck. Like, that's your gift to yourself. And that all that's all waiting for you as a traveler.
Yeah.
So don't. Spend as little money as possible. Yeah.
Yeah. I changed my Argentina plan last minute. I was supposed to stay there for 2 months. I almost died from just eating and drinking so much late at night. So I decided to follow the group to Peru. I was traveling with the group. Followed them to Peru. I'm like, it's Peru. It's cheap. Mm-hmm. It's a cheap airline. Whatever.
Good luck.
Go to check my baggage. $450.
Right.
Check my bags. And they made me check a bag that did not even need to be checked. And they're like, you bought the easy fare ticket or whatever.
No, it's the predatory airlines. They all take your money.
It's not when you see a cheap flight. This is
it's
if we
fake.
Should tell everyone.
Yes,
it's fake. Like, they're going to charge you $100 per bag and $100 for this.
If you don't, they're not going to send you an email to check in online. Then they're going to tell you you can't do it online. Then you're going to get to the airport. And it's going to be your birthday and you're going to be like, Wizz Air, but you're going to be like 60 euro to check in online. Like, do you want to pay cat? Like, or they'll send you, like, it's ridiculous.
And add like 50 euros for your backpack. And then your luggage is 0.5 overweight. So that's you're 75. And there you go. That's
they make all their money. Yeah. Happy birthday. So that's my treat to myself is all the mistakes that I make.
That's a good tip though, because to your point, I think we all think we're really good planners and we are very, very resourceful. And you have to plan these things, but like, you change your mind, you accidentally book the wrong ticket, it's not refundable, da da da. And these places don't budge. They're like, those are the rules. Read the website. It's not my problem. You deal with it and you eat the cost of a $500 flight.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
But I do think for like just a few off the top of my head, a few of my favorite things over the years is spending money. There's lots of student housing in Europe. If you see dorms, there's lots, like France is a great place, like the south of France, for example. Avignon or those places, like there'll be empty student dorms in the summer and they rent out their little rooms and you go down the hall and use the bathroom. Or I stayed in like a convent, like it's some of the little towns in Italy. Airbnb is good. There's lots of people if you're willing to stay with people, like especially expensive cities like London. Like I'm going to London now. I'm a 41-year-old woman and I'm staying for a full week in a shared house. I love places that are official Airbnbs, like meaning you get a lot. You don't have to deal with meeting anyone. You get a lock code. Anything that says like in the reviews, like the check-in was easy, the code. It means that it's like impersonal, which could be really nice, even though you're staying in a room with a shared bathroom. Half the time, no one's going to be there. Or it's other travelers and it's totally anonymous feeling. And it's kind of like, I do that all the time. And that's how you can stay in cheap places.
I just did that in Manchester and I got to stay really close into the city center, which is really hard to find. And I was so worried. I was like, it's going to be like a crazy party hostel vibe. And it's like, no, it's just townhouse. We all have a room.
Yeah. I have a $50 slot like that in Hackney and in East London. And then other things, like when you're reading reviews, first of all, if you see any fake reviews run from a place, especially about things like Wi-Fi or air conditioning.
Hot tip. If you're reading a review and it's super different than all the other reviews, like it seems off with the pattern and tone, or you check the reviewer's profile and something is sketch, like no photo, no host reviews, or the pictures just seem like AI generated and not real, it could be fake. Trust your gut when reading reviews.
Always double check scores. Like if your place on booking.com has like a, you know, read reviews, most things you can search reviews. You can search it for things like hot. Like if you're traveling in the summer, search for air conditioning. Like you want to search what people are saying about the most important things. For me, air conditioning, Wi-Fi.
What about cleanliness?
I'm like happy if I have clean sheets.
That's good enough.
Seriously. No. For hospitals, always privacy curtains, that bottom bunk. If worse comes to worse, you don't have privacy curtains, but there should be options in places. You should be able to pick. But you want air conditioning if it's a group of people. But you can put the sheet and stuff it, make a curtain when you're desperate. Yes. This is real traveler shit, you know, and there's no shame in saving money. And sometimes you just put yourself through the hostel thing and then your life on the outside feels like $1 million.
Yeah, because that's the thing, too. If you were
and stay in all female rooms. Men snore, fart. They're gross. Women are so different. Yeah. Do not stay in the co-ed rooms.
I'm like throwing up thinking of the one I stayed in London. It was 16 people mixed.
That's I can't. I don't ever do so much when I stay in a hostel, I stay with women and it's usually like it's a lot of times lots of people from Asia. Like
it's like a 4 or 6 bed.
Yeah. And everyone has like a curtain that they close at night. I have my headphones. I literally just close this little curtain, lay back. I have a MacBook Air and headphones on and it's totally peaceful. And I just like. I can afford hotels now. I'm saving money because I want to travel more. People don't understand that anybody can travel a little bit and stay in hotels. If you want to travel a lot, like us, you really parcel out your money in a way. Like we've stayed in a lot of fucking whack places, like really bad because
the roof of one place.
Yeah, like because it was unbearable. I remember I used to think that hostels were full of like sexual energy. Like, and I was scared. I'd be like, how is it people not just like rape each other in these rooms? There's only been one or two things that I've ever had in a hostel where like somebody crossed that like boundary with me. Like some guy was you can have no, it's like, let's say you have no money. And I think I did. I've never written about time when I first did Central and South America. It was after Europe and after Asia. Even it was like a weird trip. But I think I had nothing. I think I had like $400 in my account. And I did all hostels. I stayed in a hostel in Panama. A hotel room in Panama is like $25 in Panama City. You can stay in a nice place, $20. It's cheaper than anywhere. And I stayed in a hostel, which must have been like $5 a night.
Must have been that cheap.
You can really do that. Yeah. And it's not bad.
It takes you further to your point. So you can go.
You just do more and more and more.
What's on your bucket list?
If I had to buy a ticket right now, I would probably do. I've had my eye on Senegal for a long time because I like the French influence. My friend who died wanted to go there before he died. He had pancreatic cancer, so I always want to go in his honor. And you can go to the Gambia while you're there as another little country swivel in. I'm like, I want to do, you know, where you can get 2-for-1 countries. I mean, Africa in general, I would love to go like Nigeria and stuff, but I would love to get back to Asia. My friends just moved to Indonesia. I'd really go absolutely anywhere. What's on your bucket list?
Mine now is definitely Asia. I'm going to Japan.
Yeah. Oh, you have to go to Japan and Thailand. My favorite. I would love to go to South Korea. I've only been there in the airport on a layover to rehab. Yeah. Asia's great because once you get over there, you use AirAsia is quite cheap and you just hop around on the flights.
Oh, that's perfect. I'm saving that all for 2024. I have an Asia savings fund now.
And save it for the winter for the U.S. So
get out.
Where's your U.S. base?
Not really a base. Like Florida, you could see my parents, but like I don't live there. Like I don't have a lease. I don't have an apartment. I don't have a storage unit. I don't have a car.
Good.
I have no ties to the U.S. outside of like my parents' address that I send all my mail to. So
okay, my mom still gets my mail.
Yeah,
she hates it.
Little as possible.
She's like, should I send you your magazines? It's like all these magazine subscription, like Slam magazine. It's like IRS letters and GQ. And she started opening them because she's so anxious. And I was like, mom, because it's nothing. It's like, it's actually the IRS letters are because I fucking changed my residency to Maryland for a second because she lives in the DC suburbs. And I'm sure I didn't pay them fully because I resented getting taxed in Maryland. And it was, but again, I wasn't making any money those years. So it's not that much, it's a couple thousand. That's the only thing. I'm squared with the IRS.
Yeah. Shout out IRS. We're good. We're good. Now that you've been to so many places, you've done the quick short form, kind of like bobbing around. Mm-hmm. Now we're in Greece, which is a totally different experience. It's, from my understanding, your first time leading retreat.
Yeah.
How did that come to be?
It came to be Beth Cook is one of my oldest friends since the year 2001 we met. And she has, I've watched her yoga career go. I'm sure yogis don't really call it that, but she's watched my career grow. And I actually watched with interest always. The retreat model is really common for, especially for a good yoga instructor. You go around the world, you chase the sun in particular. And it's a retreat. You do yoga. I think on the actual yoga retreats, you're doing it twice a day. Here, we're only doing it once. But then I came to love traveling, just spending all my money on it. Never occurred to me. I always wanted my goals. Like whenever I have a job manifestation, I'm always like, I want to get paid to travel. Like that's my thing. So she invited me. She's like, do you want to try this, you know, to go on this retreat and invite your people? I have a following. And she's like, you can do workshops, blah, 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 writing workshops, creativity workshops, whatever. I always was wary of the creativity workshop thing because it sounds so like I'm scamming people, or it's like other people have gotten in trouble for that. So it's a kind of a buzzword. So I was just like writing workshops, you know, even though people here have been too tired to write from the sun, which is very strong. But yeah, and then the first session, I put it up on my social and it sold out like right away. We have Zena, and Zena Wiles the third. So we have our Greek on the ground here. She's the one who set up all of this. She's local. Right now we're in Sithonia, which is like the Hamptons of Greece. So it's very, and I say that not in like the flashy Hamptons way. I mean, in like people from Thessaloniki come out here the way people leave New York for the city, you know, and it's very just like beach towns. You drive to the good beaches. Americans aren't usually out here. Russians and other European people, but we've been out here having an amazing time. The first session had 21 people and they were all my readers. For one was Beth's repeat client. And then most of the people here this session are my readers, and I just love the people showed up for it and then get to hang with me while I'm sitting on a fucking hotel room. So I love it.
Yeah,
I'm going to keep doing it.
As I say, you talked about manifestation a lot, and I'm curious like if this was ever something you thought would happen, that you get to travel, teach, write, and actually make money from doing it, not wait for the book to be published and then travel.
That's a great point. I'm such a big talker. I'm like, the universe rewards action. But of course, like my comfort zone is traveling by myself, and it's behind a word processing document with no one around. So for me to actually do something, that's why I'm grateful for Beth and Zena, because I wouldn't have done this. I wouldn't have done this on my own, but now I have the confidence to do it. Yeah, I mean, I was also like in a physical, not in a place to be receptive to making more money or doing creative things. Like I was in survival mode for a very long time with my health and my sanity. And I didn't have a clear channel to manifest things because I was handicapped. I was working with a handicap. And now I feel like I want to do this more and more, work with different people, not just with Beth. She's such a pro and has been so helpful, but just mixing it up. I love the idea, like this has been a retreat, but I love the idea of like crossing that out and having like attack, because I do, like I'm not a good relaxer. I like to attack a city. I like to do as much as possible. I like to exhaust guests. Different way to do like crazy cities, maybe a little less beach and a little more,
productivity.
Crazy shit. I love cities. Here it's been different because we're at a resort and we're working with these Greek people. And Greek people are just the best at hospitality and tourism. So it's been a lot of buses and shuttling. But Beth is like, you know, usually we don't do everything together and blah, blah, blah.
I feel like teaching.
I liked it. I really do have so much in my head. And it's nice to really talk to people and see that they like hearing everything. I do have so many tricks and tips and little things that I've learned. And the stuff that I'm teaching is pretty commercial, but like, I think it's because I'm much more in the media, like a media worker. I identify as someone who works in the media more than a fine writer who's more artistic. You know what I mean? I come from magazines. So I've had a lot of fantastic workshops. Of course, the workshops that I've done like as a student have been about getting published, how to pitch, all of those things. And we haven't worked on those here together, but like I'm a media mind. And so, yeah, and of course, you've learned so much from writing a book. Like all that shit is self-taught because you learned every lesson. So yeah, I've really enjoyed it and I've been amazed. People loved it from my last session. And here we've had the beach days have been so good that the writing lessons have suffered, but I think that's good.
Yeah. And it's interesting that you taught us, I feel like, to just get it done. And so the beach days shortening the writing opportunities have pushed a lot of us to be like, just get it done.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter. Do it in the elevator, do it on the way to the to the workshop. Like, it doesn't matter.
Get it done so you can enjoy your life.
A lot where I'm like, yeah. Oh, actually, no joke, the two articles, I don't know if you want to call them articles, whatever they are, two pieces I've written here, I'm like, oh, I could just publish that for fun and just play with style and play with words and not make it such a big deal. And that's what I want to ask you about is there's a lot of people listening that want to write a book, want to start a Patreon or a Substack or something, but they're terrified that they're not a quote unquote real writer.
Yeah.
And I would love to hear your advice back to that.
Writers, listen up. Get your pens out because this info that Kat's about to share is exactly what she told us on our Greece retreat. It's what caused me to commit to writing 750 words a day since September. And as of the time of this recording, I've written over 100,000 words. Take notes and listen closely.
We are writers when we write, just like we're runners when we run. If you're a runner on the side of the road, a car is like, don't hit the runner. We're writers when we write. And most people are very, very, very intimidated by writing, and including writers. I am intimidated by writing every single day. I am scared of the fucking Word document. I'm scared that it's going to be hard. It's not going to feel good. And like a lot of times it doesn't. You just got to trust that you are going to slip into it, that all the books and the millions of books, the millions of articles, and the millions of careers that have come out of writing and just putting it out there, if it was as bad as you're fearing that it's going to be when you're catastrophizing starting it or what to do and blah, 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 like nobody would ever do anything. Like it's not that bad. Your brain does know how to do it. You've read enough, like you're prepared. You don't need to buy any more books on like how to write. Like the amount of books that I've bought about like, first of all, getting it done or like prevent procrastination to like, no, there's nothing. I used to surround myself by so much shit. Like we all are capable. I wasn't trained. I mean, I did go to college for creative nonfiction, but I was trained to be a beauty editor. I was working with beauty products, photo studios, collaborative meetings, pitching stuff. It wasn't like a writing job. We wrote for some of it, like beauty captions, but I got to eventually write a book about being a beauty editor. But like, that's what I'm saying. Anybody can write a book about what they do. Memoir is a great way. And people can put memoir on Substack. Patreon's a little harder because it is behind that wall. Substack, you can really give people a bigger taste of it for free. I mean, you can open anything on Patreon. I picked Patreon. My Patreon is just search under my social media at Kat Murnau on Instagram. You'll see me or you'll see. My Patreon, which publishes twice a month, I have a following. So it's hard for me to say what other people should do, but Substack seems to be huge. I just didn't go with it because I didn't like the font. And I had two people in my friend group, the Red Scare podcast and Cookies Hoops basketball with the hat I'm wearing. And they had Patreon. So I caught like monkey see, monkey do.
Yeah.
So with my Patreon, I make art for it on Pixlr. And kind of have a podcast model where it's like I tease it with new art. I copied my basketball podcast friends. Like this is how, you know, Red's here. But I just sort of copied other people. And that's like half of it. Because if you're reading a lot of media and if you're listening to this, you probably do, you know, like you can make it yourself.
Yeah. That's so good to hear too that you even said I copied other people.
Oh, for sure.
Steal like an artist. And you said like, you'll read books before you start writing.
Yeah.
You can mimic.
And you don't want to do it too much. You don't want to do it on and on and on. But like, it also, like, in addition, so if you're writing nonfiction, read nonfiction before it. If you're like writing a novel, like I'm trying to do, I read fiction now and I read it for like 20 minutes before it. Because it not only do you start mimicking in a good way, some of the beats and the florid language or whatever are just like, you're getting excited about writing again. You're realizing that writing brings other people's writing brings you pleasure. And then you want to be like, oh, I can do that. Like, and you just get it done. I really, my tip is always the same for people for writing. The way I get it done is the way I exercise, which is not that much, but I do it every day. But I do not do it for a long time. I do exercise 30 minutes a day. Well, now I have yoga in the morning. Plus, after this, I'm doing 30 minutes. Kit Rich is 30 minutes a day of exercise can change your life. And then for writing, the maximum I do is 500 words. So however long that takes me, I probably could do more. That's about half a page single spaced. And I personally can do that now in 40 minutes.
Yeah.
And that's with breaks. I do it within the first 4 hours that I'm awake. So morning brain, if for me is anything, if you wake up at 10, it's until 2 p.m. It's before lunch. I eat 3 meals a day. I don't know about other people, but
yeah.
I do it with the clears. The later you wait to do it, I used to try to write at night. It's like the difference between driving in a clear street when you work in the with morning brain or getting to your destination in a traffic jam, which is afternoon and evening brain. It's so much easier to swim with the current in the morning.
I love that. It reminds me of like a cup of water and a black ink drop. And like in the morning, imagine you turn on TV and it's like one black ink drop. And then you talk to your friend and now you get distracted. That's another mm-hmm. black ink drop. Then you get five emails. That's five. And yeah. all of a sudden at night you have this black cloudy ink mm-hmm. in your head that you're like, I don't even remember what I was doing and I'm not clear enough. Or in the morning, just think of it as you start every day with like a clear water bottle. That's yeah. why I love to think of it.
Yeah. And if you want to write, just get it done. Just do it really fast and not well, because you're actually way better than you think. You're all organizing sentences faster than you like, or like, you know how to do it.
Well, yesterday I didn't have that much time and I was like, fuck it, I'm doing 200 words.
Right.
I had to edit it down. I wrote 800.
Yeah. And you never would have known you could do that.
And yeah, I had like 30 minutes between showering and going to the workshop. And I'm like, oh, I thought this was going to take me 2 hours. And your advice really helped. They're just like, it doesn't have to be good. Get it done. You can edit it later. I think that's the issue everyone has, is it has to be perfect first try.
No. Oh, no. That's death. Like, and that's not how professional writers do it. I mean,
how many drafts of How to Murder Your Life?
I have no idea, but that's like many more than other people.
Like
I think I did
five or more.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Like
probably 40 drafts.
40.
Dude, I'll never work to that level again. 40. I wanted it to be, oh, I wouldn't give it to them. I would not let them publish it. I wanted it to be critic proof anywhere. I won't do that again. I don't care anymore about criticism. Yeah. Trust me, that book that everyone loves it. Like, I had a mental breakdown after it and ran away to Europe as we began this podcast talking about. I did it as sacrifice in my everything in my life. I will never do something that way again. That was a dream. And you know what? It got the New York Times bestseller. Like, I don't think I will ever care that much again. I wouldn't say that I would count on success again, but like, no one wanted me to have that hard of a time. And no one needed it to be that perfect. But like, that was all part of my addiction stuff. Yeah. Rigid perfectionism. And honestly, like making every sentence such a bang, like it's too much, you know? So I always, one of my other writing tips I've taught in the classes is like, put a few banger lines at the top, show your stuff, show what you can do, then relax and like let the narrative carry you through. And it doesn't have to be so amazing. Then like, you know, come in at the end of a chapter with a killer line, but you have to give the reader relief too. Like it's too much sometimes. But yeah, I did. I wanted every fucking paragraph of that book to be special. And I did at the expense of my mental health. And I turned it in years late and went into and like couldn't pay for my rent, all this stuff, and didn't pay tax. Like it was just like,
it was insane.
It was insane. But yeah, I got good reviews. Yay.
So, one of the last questions I have about writing is, everyone releases something personal. We want to read about the heartbreak. We want to read mm-hmm. about addiction. We want to read about love and the things that we go through every day. I think what people have a hard time, including myself, is when I put it out, I'm going to feel exposed and I'm going to be attacked and I'm going to feel like shit. And I would rather just protect myself and stay in my bubble and be like, oh, I'm a bad writer. I don't know how to write. And it's safe.
Oh, I know.
I think why people resonate with your book so much and why, I mean, How to Murder Your Life came out, what, 2016?
Yeah.
It's 2023 and you sluttered.
No, it can't be. It must have been 2017. That's way too long. I'm not crazy.
I think it's 2016.
Oh my God.
P.S. We confirmed it was 2017, 7 years ago.
It was 7 years later, right? We're on a retreat where 30 plus people have booked to come learn from you, which shows you how impactful that book was. And I think it's because you were not the hero the whole time in the story.
Right.
You were irresponsible. You hurt people. People hurt you. You got in really bad situations. It wasn't like, I'm amazing. I'm the best. I overcame this thing. It's like so much of you was like not painted in the best light. How did you write that and not feel like, holy shit, what the hell am I doing?
I trusted my character. I know I'm a good person. I don't do that much for others, but I know I have no ill will or malice. And I definitely always just try to like write about people in the best light and paint them as best as I could. I don't need to sell out other people to sell my work. But I do think that shit comes, like takes over you. You go into a trance state where it's like actually unbelievable the people that you're writing about and how you're doing it. But like, I don't want to be corny. The muse comes into you. Like, how do we recreate dialogue? Like, how do we put words in people's mouths from 20 years ago? Like, I wrote scene. Like, you just do. I don't know. It's your inner wisdom. And it's like, if you're a good person, and I mean, bad people should write books because you see that too, and that's fun. But that's going to come through, and you should trust who you are and what your intentions are. Like, if you don't have ill intentions, I think people will respect what you're doing. It's hard to describe. It's almost like if you have a friend who really is like a photographer, like you understand, and you don't want your picture to, you understand when he takes it, you know, because he's an artist or he's working, like, in. You're like, okay, this is different than other people who are taking this picture of me. You know, someone like me, I deal with all sorts of energy all the time. I have some people who are just like down and treat me like a normal person. I have some people who I can tell are just like gawking at me, looking for this person that they've seen on the internet, looking for like flaws in my appearance. I see their eyes wander when they're, you know, like even on these retreats, like, you know, they're kind of divided, but I forget where that was going.
Just about how you write about yourself in a light where you're not always the most likable person.
Yeah, because no one's going to trust you if you pretend that you are. But addiction writing is also like a little easy. That's hard. Writing about personal stuff like love, that's harder.
And why do you think that?
Because addiction is just like the rat pushing a button. It's so compulsive and it's actually very empty and it's not emotional. Like How to Murder Your Life, there's a lot of sad moments in it, but like it's a very numbed out decade or whatever I cover in that book. She can just disappear. I'm talking in third person now, like a freak. No, it's, but just trust yourself. Like,
trust yourself.
Also, and nothing, writing is great because it's the only thing in this world you can control. And if you write a book, you'd be shocked. The thing that surprised me most by writing a book was how much control they give the author.
This information was shocking to me. I thought you completely handed over creative control and lost your independence when working with a publisher. I don't know that I'm still 100% sold on trying to lock in a publisher, but if Kat Marnell, my favorite author and a New York Times bestseller, says go for it, maybe it's worth a shot.
They'll fight with you at the cover, blah, 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 but actual text, there's not a single word that's going to be there that you don't want. And you better fight and don't let anyone tell you different because you can control all of that. So nothing is ever going to get out there that you don't want. And you'll edit it later and you'll take stuff out and you'll protect people. And that's what I did. And somehow I managed to write a memoir. And I just think people loved me more after it. But I don't think they, like my parents and stuff, read it. But I think they were just relieved that it wasn't as bad as it could have been.
Yeah. That's something you taught us in the workshop, which I thought was helpful. Like, pick one villain. You don't need to take down everybody just to get to the top.
Right. Yeah. You just pick one. Like, pick the real people in your life who are real abusers. In retrospect, I don't even know why I changed the names. Well, I guess to protect his family. Of like, when you have someone violent who's like abusing you,
right,
you should write about that shit. I don't know, the legal stuff is really interesting because that's a whole other podcast, but yeah, pick the real villains and don't write about the negative stuff that other people in your life, and be careful because they'll care about everything. They will care about the clothes that you, if you're like, he was wearing a this and that t-shirt, they'll be like, I would never wear that t-shirt. And also ask people, like I asked someone, like my little brother, I would have just written about him and thrown him in there, this, the other, just like accessor. And I was like, do you want to be in the book? He's like, absolutely not. So he's not my book. My sister was like, yes. And now she can pretend that she hates it now, but I have an email. Get it in writing too.
Yeah. Oh, good. Tip. That is a business tip.
Yeah, get it in writing. You never know.
You never know.
Just be like, is it cool if I write about you? Do you want me to change your name?
I love that. So is that how you handle negativity online? Because I know there's always going to be people that don't like it. And there's gonna be people that
I think I get it less than other people.
Yeah, you do.
I don't know why.
But how?
I showed my work. You know why? Because I came through and I showed my work. I said I did what I said I was going to do. I said I'm going to write a book. And I did it. And I think people can tell now that I'm all about work. This isn't a game to me when people give me their money. And it's like on this trip, like people, there was all the speculation this would be the Fire Fest. When I take people's money in my pocket, I take it very seriously. I learned that from people like Howard Stern, people I admire. He doesn't fucking treat his listeners like ATMs. I will not treat my readers like ATMs. I have very high standards for quality and I'm a conservative person in a lot of ways. But, you know, travel, for example, taught me the value of a dollar. Like people give me $5 a month for Patreon, like $5, I take that seriously. And I've been very proud of my unsubscribe. My unsubscribe rate is pretty low, not because I'm saying like I'm always like the best, but I always deliver like obsessively. You saw me working today. I was like, I can't do like I'm in fucking Greece at the beach and I'm down there in the lobby. Like I'm always getting my work done. And you just have to believe in the work. Work is a privilege. Just like I think exercise is a privilege. Like if you can work, show your work, just come through. You don't have to say shit anymore. You don't have to defend yourself. People will defend you. People will come in. If someone's trashing me online, someone comes in and says like, I loved your book or she can write, or she works hard. You know, that's all I want people to acknowledge that I work hard, which I do. And it just looks different because we figured out how to, I know, like live abroad and do it. But especially after COVID, these are options for a lot of people. Life is how we spend our money. It's how we spend our money. I do not, before we end this, I know we're running out of time, but let me just give a few things that maybe people don't see. I have not bought clothing in such a long time. Almost no designer clothes. I have a huge, huge stash of clothes from the past that I pull out of storage units of my mom's house. And then I have obviously like the clothes that I just take from apartment to apartment. Like I have huge garment racks stuffed with clothes. We all have way more clothes than we need. I don't buy new clothes anymore. I occasionally somebody online calls me out on like my bad fashion, which is funny because it's true. I don't care. Like people don't realize that like not everyone in New York goes with that game. For a while I did. And I name drop a lot of designer labels and stuff in my book. But like that was all used clothes. I don't even buy the used stuff anymore. Travel changed my brain. I don't have any interest in that. Or if I do, it's like I shut that off. The sacrifices you make, I do not have clothes. I don't go to restaurants. I haven't even bought like the sneaker. I use crumbling exercise mats. I don't have a gym membership. Like I save a lot of money in other ways.
I talked about this in episodes 215, 216, and 219. Align your spending with your values to live a fulfilling life. I personally value leisure, vitality, and travel, and most of my money ends up going to those three things.
We're all making the same amount of money every month. All the people listening who think that they can't afford to travel and are like probably make the same amount of money as I do, which is just a normal amount for someone my age. I just spend it on travel at the expense of other things. I don't know what they have. Dogs. Like I would love a Golden Bentonville's. I cannot say restaurants enough. Brunch. Drinks. I don't drink. I don't spend any money in alcohol. Like, I'm a very frugal person in a weird way because I love to just fucking run off to... And again, like, I'm staying in a hostel when I go to Toronto. And like, this summer, I didn't really have $300 extra in July. I know it sounds crazy, but I didn't have that money to go to Toronto for those tickets. But I did it anyway. I wanted to. I don't know. Why was I so broke? I was so broken this summer.
I remember you read about it.
I couldn't remember because now I have all this money. I was like, what? But because things happen, you have to buy some shit. Because I usually keep a couple thousand in my bank account just for. But, you know, I'm living month to month. And that's fine. Probably because of travel. But I don't own any property. I have my rent in New York is insane. Yeah, I'm just unconventional. Well, it's annoying, but I don't know what to do. There's no choice. One more year.
No sublet?
No, I'm not doing that. It's too hard.
It's too much. I think when people look at travelers, especially at the level and pace that we do, it probably looks like we spend $10,000.
Yeah.
Flights and hotels and blah, blah,
blah. No.
I'm like, you spend more money with your Amazon hauls, Sephora hauls, Target.
Oh, yeah. I don't go to any of that shit. I have like a $400 used MacBook Air. I'm a professional writer. I get used computers from walmart.com, refer, because also when you travel as much, you don't want the nice computer because nothing's ever happened, knock on wood, but
everyone knows it happened.
Ooh, God, that's me, Nate.
Oh, I've done. Well, of course this has happened to me in the past, my dear. My entire thing is that twice I've spilled Perrier on my laptops before an international flight. It happened 1 year and then it happened the next year, both at my mom's house in D.C. Where also, I lived at my mom's house in D.C. for like weeks or months at a time between trips when I didn't have a place to live. Like, feeling like a fucking piece of shit, being like, Caitlin, do you want to go out to dinner with me and my boyfriend? Like, and I'd be like, no, mom. And I was like, God damn it. There are sacrifices for my sick Instagram account, okay? Which is not even that sick. It's mainly me looking weird in very, very cheap clothes and the wrong makeup that I carry around in Ziploc bags because I don't do Sephora hauls anymore. I just use whatever's around. I put it on with my fingers. I haven't used a makeup brush in years.
You don't have a makeup brush.
Curling irons. All I don't care. I don't travel with all that shit. It weighs me down.
It's just so interesting, the juxtaposition of coming from beauty editing to like,
I know.
I have none of those.
I know. I'm a street urchin.
A street urchin. Yeah.
It's bad.
She's minimalistic is what she's saying.
Minimalist life. Personal life, too. Yeah. It's like my empty, like a loft. That's what I always say.
It's more space. I do think something about personal declutters everything.
Well, a personal life. Yeah. Decluttered my personal life. I'm just like, oh, yeah, I don't have a fucking man of any of this stuff. And that's what you get when you have the traveler's life. But we love it, right? We've never had it any other way.
Love it. We're obsessed. Okay. Final question. What's a book, a podcast, an article, something that really tickled your brain lately that you want to share?
My podcast that I'm listening to right now, I wouldn't say it's a brain tickler, but I find it quite good. I love TMZ. So it's Dax Holt, who was founder of TMZ back in the day with Harvey, all that. And this guy, Adam, who's the New York City paparazzi. He still is. He's the guy, whenever you see videos that get sold, it's him. But he's not like the chasing paparazzi. He's good friends with celebrities. He gets them coming out of the Today Show, blah, blah, blah. So they have a podcast that I find very good. It's on YouTube. It's called Hollywood Raw. Very soothing, and it's talking about celebrities in a way that's really smart, and it's insider baseball. I love media, and I like to learn more about how it works. So this is actually the most, it's like kind of talking about TMZ. You know what I mean? It talks about it's talking about behind the scenes, how things work in celebrity in a way that's real and that people only usually speculate on. But Hollywood is pretty locked down. Like, the industry maintains its prestige by not talking too much about the inner machinations of how photos are set up and blah, blah, blah. And this one just always talks about that. So it goes through every week's got. It's just like, if I'm going to digest the gossip stories from that week, which I always do, I don't think the bloggers have original information anymore. So the podcasters do. And so they have guests on like Dumont and all of that. But these two, so it's Hollywood Raw and they're just, and it's free and everything. But yeah, that's my podcast. But I switch. Usually it's like a lot of comedian stuff. I keep it light. I like pop culture. I like stuff I can like work out to.
Yeah.
The end.
The end. Okay. So this, I know I keep saying final question, but what's coming up for you? Like, where can everyone find you? What are you working on? How can they support you?
My Patreon is $5 a month for two columns. You can have the entire archive when you do a $5 subscription. I'm writing my 75th column right now. You get to read all of them. It's all by writing their 1,000 words each. 75,000 words is the length of a book. And they're full of pictures, magazine style, and it's fun stuff, and it's beauty recs. Yeah.
When I'm subscribed to, because it is, it's fun.
Thank you.
Like, when you were doing a bunch of the travel stuff.
Oh, I'm glad you liked it. Yeah.
I was like saving all of them on like screenshots.
Yeah.
Remembering this. It was so good.
So it's just very unique, I think, to me. Like, I don't think anyone else would make that Patreon with the visuals and the stuff that I do and the weird. It's just my brain is different. Travel made it different. It's also kind of more commercial than I think a lot of people's writing because I have this weird magazine background. My influences are just mad weird. It's like travel and women's magazines and like grimy New York City party life. And Julia Fox is in my column every week. It's like a peek behind the scenes of like some interesting shit. And again, consistency is where it all comes out. It's nice to have something to write. So that is my primary thing. And I love you subscribe to that. And you can find that on my social media. So it's @Kat_Marnell on both, I believe, Instagram and X, formerly known as Twitter. And I post all of my links and stuff to that all of the time.
And you guys have to buy her book.
Oh, yeah. And my books. My book.
Yeah.
How to Murder Your Life. People love it. They do. Because I destroyed myself for it. So, yeah, it got to where I wanted it to go. And that is a memoir of Adderall addiction set in the world of nightclubs and Condé Nast fashion magazines. And then my Audible original Self-Tanner for the Soul is my travel diaries, and that is exclusively on Audible, and you cannot read it anywhere.
Yeah, you can't. You have to listen, and it's amazing.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Kat, thank you so much for coming on in my non-expert opinion. And for everyone listening, run, do not walk, to buy her book, How to Murder Your Life, and Audible Original, all linked in the show notes below. Check out her Patreon, Beauty Shambles, and definitely consider becoming a paid subscriber. And while you're at it, head to my Substack, Slight Turbulence, to read my work about travel, love, lust, and everything in between. You can support this podcast by sharing it in all your group chats, Instagram stories, tagging Kat and I, and maybe pop it in your newsletter. Anything helps, and I notice it all. Consider leaving a written review on Apple Podcasts and engaging with the interactive polls on Spotify. I choose a winner every month to do a one-on-one session with me. Leave your review and send it to info@chelseareif.com or DM me at @chelseareif on Instagram. This podcast is completely free without ads, so your support, financial or words of affirmation, is the ultimate gift. You can consider supporting financially at the link in the show notes or subscribing to my Substack, Slight Turbulence. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, your story matters, expert or not.